In today's episode, we're going to find out what spirituality and sports have in common with our guest, Christopher J. Wirth. Join us for a powerful conversation.
Soul Nectar Show, the Soul Nectar Show. You're invited, delighted to discover who you are. Possible if you believe. So join us on this beautiful journey.
Soul Nectar Show.
Soul Nectar Show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Soul Nectar Show, that show where we talk about all things essence, where we gather around the campfire like our ancestors before us, and we tell stories of experiences that we couldn't explain or things that happened that led us in a whole new direction in our life and opened up a whole new possibility. And I'm your host, Carrie Hummingbird. I love to have these conversations with experts that I meet that have interesting stories and interesting purposes that I feel open us up to understand more about ourselves and why we're here. What the heck are we doing on planet Earth? And I like to help people to take those first steps of their own journey, of their divine conversation, their unique life conversation with whatever they conceive of as their source, God, source, creator, universe, whatever that is for you. And I love to have these conversations. So today I always have these interesting guests who I am the pleasure of meeting. And today we're going to talk to Christopher Wirth. Welcome, Christopher.
I appreciate you having me here.
So Christopher is a founder and president of No Quit Living, which is a speaking, coaching, and training company. And he works with individuals, teams, and corporations to help improve accountability, effectiveness, and efficiency. No Quit Living looks to motivate and inspire clients to never give up on themselves, their goals, and their dreams. And he's the host of the No Quit Living podcast, which has been rated as a top 50 podcast on iTunes in three different categories: business, health, and self-help. So he's also a keynote speaker. So if you're looking for someone, you'll figure out when we get to the end of this. If you know your company needs a speaker, then you'll know who to go to. So he's also a basketball coach and a collegiate basketball coach in his career, as well as high school basketball. So basketball features prominently. And he lives in Greenwich, Connecticut. So you guys may not know this, but I spent my junior high and my high school years in Enfield, Connecticut, which is not so far from Greenwich, Connecticut. So this is great, really exciting. And so welcome to the show.
I think two Connecticut people coming at you.
Connecticut. Connect-cut. Connect a cut. So tell us your story of how you stumbled into this purpose to help people not quit. No quitting. Where does that come from?
It's about 58 hours and years. No, it's actually interesting. The name actually came, I am a big quote person, and I think I subscribe still to this day to probably 7 or 8 different quotes of the days, different email addresses. And it was probably 2005, 2006, 2007, in that range. I came across a quote by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, which is, it's always too early to quit. And I don't know what it was, but it kind of stood out to me. I wrote it down. And then it's like when you want to buy a new car or you get a new car, then all of a sudden you see the exact car, the exact color all over the place. I saw that quote all over the place, and ultimately I got a license plate which was No Quit. And literally from that point forward, it just kind of became who I am. And what I love about the whole concept of No Quit is, it doesn't matter if you're into sports, business, if you're into music, entertainment, if you're into any genre, any aspect of life, young, old, doesn't matter where you are, every single person in life has been hit multiple times with obstacles, challenges. And it's all about just getting up one more time. So for me, whether I'm talking to a sports team, whether I'm talking to a business company, a sales team, whether I'm talking to a school and they're going over their objectives of what they want to do with not only their curriculum, but also as teachers, it's something that resonates with everybody. And I think in today's day and age, the reality for me is the concept that really comes twofold is the positivity piece. And I think in our country, not only our country, but I think the world, we need more positivity ever today. And I think what I find, and I have three young kids, is everything is negativity first. It's this person's bad, this religion's bad, this political candidate is bad, as opposed to focusing on the good. So for me, we want to inspire people to just never give up. And I think over the last multiple years, my mission has kind of formed and reformed. And it's really the cornerstone for everything has been the no quit concept of just motivating people to never give up on themselves, their goals, or their dreams. And the reality is we all get knocked down. The question is, are we going to get back up one more time?
Yeah, I love that. We all, and I can definitely, as I met you and we had a conversation, I could definitely feel the influence of sports, you know, training through this whole thread of your life. And I played soccer, you know, I also played basketball one season, but I mostly played soccer. Right. And the thing about soccer is that the game is fast and you get knocked around a lot. You get knocked down. I mean, there's been games where I've gotten the ball kicked right in my face, like whack, you know, and almost like she intended to do it, right? Knock me down on my butt, you know, and the thing is you get back up. Like, you don't stop just because that's part of the game in a way. Like, we expect it to be part of the game of a basketball game or a soccer game or a football game that you're going to get knocked down and you have to get back up. But it's almost like we don't expect that in life. Like, we get irritated that it just happened, or we get like upset that this challenge happened and knocked us down. I mean, how do you help people transition that? Because you've been a coach, so you've kind of got this mentality that, hey, that stuff's probably going to happen as part of the game of life. I mean, how do you talk to people about these kind of things?
Yeah, you know, I think you hit it on the head. It's part of life. And I think sports for me is a perfect analogy, just because it's something that I grew up with. But now a lot of my coaching is not in the sports world. But what we like to go through with a lot of our clients is looking at what potentially could happen and what potentially you could do if and when you have those obstacles or those challenges come and hit you head on. Just like you mentioned, in a soccer game, you get knocked down. You don't have 3, 5, 10, 20 seconds to think about it. Like, maybe, Carrie, you think you should get up? I don't know. What happens is you get knocked down and you get up immediately. There's no question. You know, coach didn't say to you, hey, Carrie, you got knocked down and you're just sitting there on your butt for like 35 seconds looking up at the butterflies. You know, is there a reason why? And you're like, well, I didn't know. The reality is you get knocked down and almost instantaneously you get back up. But like you said before, in life and in business and in the real world, sometimes people don't expect it. They expect everything to go perfect. And what we try to focus on is be prepared for if and when you do get knocked down. Obviously, don't hope or don't want it to happen. But if and when it does happen, you have a plan. And that's something that we focus on with our clients is you'll look at everything that's coming your way. Look at what potentially could happen. Obviously, you're not going to prepare for every 1,000 potential things. But you look at what most likely is going to happen and you're prepared for it. So if and when you get knocked down, if and when you don't get that sale, if and when, you know, you don't get that promotion, and you're not sitting there with your eyes wide open saying, well, what do I do now? You automatically jump into, okay, well, here's what I need to do. And we prepared for it. Excuse me, we planned for it. And now we know what we need to do. And that's something that we're very specific with our clients, is putting together a plan and being disciplined with that plan. I think that's a component of it that a lot of people miss, is doesn't matter what you want to accomplish or achieve, there is always an importance of being disciplined in your actions and your thoughts. And I think for me, that's something else we do a lot, is we go into the mindset with our clients saying, okay, how do you mentally get yourself in that place? And I think a lot of companies and people don't do that. And not that you need to spend an inordinate amount of time doing that, but I think a lot of people just always look for the best, anticipate the best, and all of a sudden they get a curveball thrown at them and they're like, well, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to think. What do I do? So we really try to put our clients in those situations where, you know, they expect it, but more importantly, if and when it comes, they've thought about it, they have a plan, and they're disciplined enough to know what they need to do and how to do it.
So many thoughts are coming to me as you're talking. I was like, wham, wham, wham. So God, just like, I'll just lay them out on you. So like, one thought is, the reason why I think a lot of people are afraid of risk is because they're afraid of something bad happening that they didn't anticipate. So they keep themselves like super small and shallow. And, you know, predictable. But predictable isn't where the magic happens. Like, predictable is like boring, stagnant, and status quo. And nothing magical or amazing is going to happen in what you expect in the predictable path. Talk about it, because I could see you just like, yes. Like, you, I could.
And I love these conversations, because what I find is a lot of people that are in the same mindset, and you and I had a really good conversation before you were on my podcast, but you use the word predictable, and you also use the word status quo. And I would say the word, I use status quo all the time. I love predictable. I haven't used predictable. I'm definitely going to start using it now. But also the comfort zone. It's where everything's comfortable, where everything, you know what's going to happen. You know, on Monday at work, you have, you know, this for lunch. On Tuesday, you know, you have a sales meeting from 8:15. You know exactly where it is. But, you know, fear is the number one dream killer out there. And it's the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of taking a risk. It's the fear of, well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get the job promotion. And I always tell somebody, okay, so you think just randomly somebody's going to knock on your cubicle or desk and say, hey, you didn't put your name into the hat, but hey, what do you think about a promotion? I said, it's not going to happen. I said, and the other flip side of that is the worst case scenario is it's not going to happen. But it doesn't matter what you want or you think or you hope for. If you don't try, it's never going to happen. And that's something that, you know, goes back to the sports analogy I always tell people is, it doesn't matter what your sport is. You know, you, for example, played soccer. I could tell you, and the analogy would be, has there ever been a goal scored in the history when somebody didn't kick the ball?
No.
Has a home run ever been hit when someone didn't swing a bat? Has it, you know, you fill in the
no,
blank.
And if somebody, you know, if you watch a soccer game, somebody is always getting flattened by somebody's, like, well-placed foot to trip them. Like, always. And you could cry foul and you can be pissed off the referee didn't catch it. But if you do that, you're going to miss the next play. So, like, you just have to get up as fast as you can and hope the referee caught it. And if not, like, you just keep playing. But if you sit there and, like, throw a tantrum or get upset because, like, oh, this happened to me and why did this happen to me? And you get involved in, like, you know, there's this story that my teacher would tell, my spiritual teacher would tell. She's like, listen, somebody, like, pierces you with an arrow. You get take the arrow out. That's the first step. Take the arrow out. But we don't. We leave the arrow in there and we're like, oh my God, this hurts so much. Somebody, I can't believe that person pierced me with an arrow. How dare they? Who was it? Who was it that, and why? And why did they do? And we leave it in there. And meanwhile, we're dying with the arrow.
Probably do call it, hey, look at my arrow.
This freaking, and everyone's like, what? In the support group, everybody, yeah, I got my arrow too. I got mine, like, through my side, though. And then I got one over here. And I got one over here, yeah. And everyone's got these support groups. I'm like, where's the freaking pain point? But, like, seriously, take the arrow out. Definitely process, right? Because you don't want to repeat the mistake.
Yeah.
But this isn't about, like, taking it personally in terms of, like, your moral character or who you are, or life just throws you punches.
You know,
that's just what it does.
I want to interject on one thing you said. It hit me. A very good friend of mine, he's also a client. He's a top college basketball coach, and he's coached at some of the most prolific schools in the country. And he has talked about something literally with me for the last 10 years plus, and he shares with all his players, is it's make the next play. You know, the next play. Just like you said, you know, you can get knocked down and you know, cry for spilled milk and ask for the referee, or hey, you know, or you make the next play. And it doesn't mean you anticipate or expect not making the shot or the other team scoring. But what happens is you can't worry about it. It happened. It's over. They scored 2 points or 3 points. They got a touch, whatever it is. You got to focus on making the next play. And I think so many people overemphasize what just happened. They overemphasize, you know, it's almost like paralysis by overanalysis. Well, they scored and I'm mad and I'm, you know, upset. And all of a sudden 3 minutes later and you're like, and they just scored again because you were, and it's just the focus of, you know, make the next play. And it's so simple to say, but it's so hard to do in some ways because everybody gets caught up in this whole, well, what do I do next? What happens if they score again?
Well, I think it has to, you know, in life, it has to do with your ability to actually have emotional intelligence with yourself to the point where you can process something like that. You know, like, it doesn't take you years because you suppressed it, denied it, you know, pushed it away because of your self-worth and you don't want to look at it. No, like, if you get really emotionally intelligent, like, you can, like, damn, okay, I had anger. Woof. Now I've got anger. I'm going to use that anger to propel me into the next decision that I'm going to make because I'm so pissed off that thing just happened. I'm going to take that energy and use it as fuel, like jet fuel, like, bam, I'm going to go this way now. You know, and I feel like that's kind of, not to bring it into political space, but that's kind of where we are in our country right now. I was noticing it myself last night watching some debates, and I was like, I was feeling it within myself, like all this, like, and I was like, I'm pissed, I'm pissed, I'm pissed. And then I was like, wait a second, no, I'm not pissed. I'm going to stop using that word. I am fired up. And that's not a bad thing. I am fired up about this country. I am fired up about what we need to do. So, like, I think we can use the energy instead of taking it personally, let us drag us down. we can actually take that energy and use it as fuel to catalyze the next move we're going to make, like you're talking about.
I talk about all the time. It's funny. We speak very similar languages, but what I say is take that energy, use it as fuel for you to take positive action. And you know, your first response is you're upset, you're fired, you're pissed, which is okay. It's natural. But then when I work with my clients, it's okay, internalize that in a positive direction. So even if you don't like that candidate, or if you're anti-Republican or anti-Democrat, whatever it is, it's perfectly okay to have your opinion, but do something in a positive direction. That's something we talk about all the time, is take action, but take positive action. And Zig Ziglar, who we all know, I'm sure, amazing motivational speaker, he said something, said it probably thousands of times, but it hit me one day, probably about 10 years ago when he was still alive, is he said, it's okay to have a sports team that you really love and you root for. It's okay to have a political party that you love and you, you know, really get behind. He said, but don't be anti somebody else. He said, you can be for your fill in the blank team, religion, whatever, without being, you know, anti. And I remember that I was probably in a good mood that day, or just running on the right mindset. But I remember listening to it and I said, wow, I said, our country needs to hear this. Our world needs to hear this. It's okay to be different. It's okay to say, you know what, Kerry, I understand where you're coming from. I respect you, but I'm very much on the opposite side of that argument. And that's so much different than be like, no, like, you're wrong. Let me tell you why I'm, no, it's okay to differ. But we focus on this, fuel yourself with that energy, you know, internalize it for a second, understand where you're coming from. But if you're going to take action, take positive action and don't take anti anything. And that's the thing that I wish I could sell to the world today, is don't take anti action. It's okay to be different and not want that team to win or your team to lose, but don't be anti somebody, be pro your stuff or be pro your belief. And I think that would just eliminate so many problems. And I jokingly said this on another podcast last week. I said to a gentleman, I won't go into his beliefs because he's a little bit, you know, 100% behind his stuff. But I said to him, I said, you know, it'd be interesting. I said, if next political season comes around, I said, if there was no anti marketing or advertising, and he looked at me and he said, there'd be no advertisement. It would just be like, hi, I'm so-and-so, vote for me. He said, cause all it is now is why you're a terrible person and why I'm better. And that's not what our country was built on.
Yeah, exactly. Our country was supposedly founded on freedom of expression and having, you know, freedom of choice in terms of your belief systems. And as long as you're not hurting somebody else with it, that, you know, that you're able to keep living your life the way you choose to live it. I mean, it feels the best for you and your track. And I think that we have gotten too far out in like trying to control other people and control the outcome on everything. And this gets back to the beginning we were just talking about. You're trying to control and predict everything and keep it all like tightened down and like make people do what you want them to do, so your life is more predictable and you're in your comfort zone. That's not what we're here for. We're here for our own journey. We're here for our expression in our unique being. You know, I'm the only one that has my thumbprints, Chris. I'm a unique design, and so is everybody else. You're a unique design. You're the only one with those thumbprints. Nobody will ever have it before or after you ever. It's a one-time thing. So like, we got to stop worrying about what everybody else is doing and start doing what we're meant to do. And stay in our lane, you know. And I think like people aren't going to like it. That's okay. We're not living in the caveman times where if you get kicked out of the tribe, you're going to die. You don't have to be liked by everybody. It's all right.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I think you said it beautifully. It's okay to stay in your own lane. It's okay to have your own fingerprints. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you can't change teams or you can't change. You know, I know a lot of people that have changed their political beliefs over the years, and that's fine as long as you're not, you know, hurting somebody else or being, you know, aggressively anti, or that's fine, you know. And the thing I talk about all the time is there are so many ways to do things positively that people just don't understand. And again, it goes back to, we're in a country now, especially in the United States, where it's anti first and against second, as opposed to, let me explain to you, Kerry, why, you know, I feel a little different. It's, well, no, no, well, what about this? And you're wrong. And I think if we eliminated some of those words and embraced change and being different, I think we'd be in a much more fun place, I think.
Absolutely, without stepping over anything, you know, because we also do a lot of that, you know, suppress and deny and then pretend like everything is all hunky-dory with a big plastic smile, and then it's all bullshit at the end of the day, you know. So we got to be real with where we're at, you know. If you want to take a journey, you got to start with where you are right now, and where you are right now might be pretty shitty. Like, you might be really angry, you might be feeling this or that, or, you know, things might be messy. You got to start with where you are. That's the truth of the situation. But then, like you're talking about, you can use that as fuel. Like, there's gold nuggets inside that. I always tell people, there's gold nuggets inside the crap that you don't want to look at. Like, that's the gold. Like, go in there, look at it. Not to stay there, not to dwell in it, but to clean it out and make decisions. You know, we want to make decisions about what's the next step. Where do I want to go? Rather than sit in your poopy diaper and, like, say it's not poopy, right? I mean, that's kind of what it's about.
I love that analogy. Sit in your poopy diaper and just say it's not poopy. I like it.
Yeah. How many kids? I actually, that's because I have one of my little children liked to stay in his diaper, and he would just deny that it was poopy, and you could smell it. You knew it was, and you're like, what is your problem? It's because he didn't want to be interrupted to go deal with it. But, you know, we have to deal with some stuff. Like, we got to deal with that stuff. We got to, like, make a decision around it. And if we don't, it's kind of like, I'm sure you see this all the time on your teams when you coach people, these group dynamics, is that it actually lowers the energy of the group if there's not positive, like, forward progress on setbacks. Like, if the team lingers in the defeat of the moment, or they blame each other for it and they start infighting, or they feel demoralized by the other team, like, those are all psychology things. And you can just see that, like, I've just watched so many games with my kids where you just see the energy going down, 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 and then they just, like, getting their butts kicked and they hate the game now. So talk a little bit about that. Like, I think a lot of people in our country are in the spot of, like, I really don't like this game. This game is not fun. You know, like, we need to change the game.
Yeah, I think when I was coaching high school and also at the college level, we had a rule, or we called this 24-hour rule, is you can't celebrate or, you know, embark on too much woulda, coulda, shoulda for more than 24 hours. So you lose a tough game or you lose a game you shouldn't have, 24 hours and it's done. So the next morning, you're on to the next game. And I think it's the same thing when you win a game. And so many championships have been won or lost because teams over-celebrate or overanalyze and overthink a loss, and all of a sudden they just, you know, tune in, you know, a day or two later, and all of a sudden the series is over, and you're like, well, what just happened? So that's something that I think is interesting that you touched on, because it's so easy to say it now, and it was really easy to say when I'm laying out the season for the kids, like, all right, you know, if we have a really good win, 24-hour rule, and we have a really bad loss or a tough loss, you know, 24-hour rule, and it sounds easy, but it's the same thing with companies. You say you lose that sale or the merger doesn't go through. What happens is people take a day, turns into two, turns into three. All of a sudden, a week later, you as a company, you as a team, you as an individual haven't done anything positive. And not that everything in life is Pollyanna and wonderful and perfect all the time, but when you overanalyze things, you know, you lose a week. You know, and I talk from stage a lot, and I said the biggest and most valuable thing that anybody has is time. You know, you can get money back, you can get opportunities back, you can get sales back. But you can't go back to yesterday, or you can't go back to the game the night before. So I think for us, it's focusing on what is happening in front of us. But more importantly, what happened, that win or the loss, losing the sale, not getting the job promotion, how are you going to handle the next day? And that's something that we really focus with our clients, is looking at what's coming ahead. Doesn't mean you forget, like you had said before. It doesn't mean you just, you know, snap your fingers and it's done. But you figure out. And like you said earlier, you want to make sure you don't repeat that mistake or repeat that loss. But how do you move forward? And that's what we really look at, is being, as I said before, being positive with our action. And it doesn't mean that you forget stuff, but it's focusing on, okay, where can I go from here? And I think that's something that's so much easier said than done, but it's something that we really focus on a lot with our clients. It's okay, we need to positively move forward and really focus on what's coming, not so much looking in at the back. And, you know, there's all those sayings and quotes is why the windshield is so big and the rearview mirror is so small, because you're always looking ahead. And same thing with the rearview mirror. The rearview mirror is small as opposed to the windshield. And that's something that's very transferable, because people, and I always have teams look at that, and I'll put up a slide every now and then and say, well, it's the same thing with your season or with your sales cycle or with your merger. And people say, wow, you know, I hadn't thought about it that way.
I've also noticed, though, like, if you, you know, with spiritual work, which this is all, like, so aligned for me, like, it's all the same thing, you know, we're just saying different words, but it's kind of like, if you look at the shadow, though, instead of trying to avoid it, like, so much energy, people put so much energy in trying to avoid looking at the uncomfortable things, that if you just take an afternoon and just go into it and just look at it and explore it and go, okay, what am I saying to myself? What's going on in my brain that I keep trying to push away and not look at? Like, just, you know, the more you face that crap, the less power it has over you. And then you have more energy to move forward. So I also think, like, there is a way that looking in the rearview mirror is important. But, it, you know, it's not exactly review, I guess, because it's happening in the moment. Like, your brain is just, like, trying to avoid, like, there's the echoes and the thought tunnels in your brain that just keep happening over and over and over again. At some point, you got to look at it to dismantle it and rewire it to take it out of the way. You got to do that work. Otherwise, you're just going to keep putting energy in, like, trying to, like, get it out of the way. It's going to keep coming up until you actually look at it and address it. And I think a lot of people avoid that part.
It's interesting. We do speak very similar languages, and some of the words are a little different, but what you just said about the energy is something that we also reference to as effort. And what I believe is, it doesn't matter whether you're an athlete or not, every single one of us only have a certain amount of energy or output that we can do. And if we focus 20, 30, 40% on, like you said, avoiding the shadow or looking behind and overanalyzing it, it means that that time or effort you can't put somewhere else. And, you know, you can look at it, it doesn't matter how you look at it, but that's the reality, is we all have a certain amount of energy before we get tired and we need to take a nap or we need to go to bed. It doesn't matter how insanely trained you are. It doesn't matter if you're Michael Phelps and you're the best swimmer in the world. Michael Phelps can't swim all day long. You know, he's an amazing athlete. He's the most glorified Olympian of all time, but he never swam from the beginning of the Olympics nonstop till the end. You know, he had a day off here. He did one meet. And that's what I think is so important, is you can't spend all your time, effort, energy other places and expect to have all the energy left over. And I use that analogy and example a lot with my clients, because when you think about it that way, you know, you take a step back and say, well, you know what? I've never thought about it. Is if you exhaust all that, you're not going to have it for the positive things. And I think when people look at it and think about it that way, it almost like refocuses you, where you say, okay, I hadn't thought about it that way. And you know what? I do have a big meeting or a big appointment or a big date tomorrow night. I'd rather be ready and excited for that than spending all my time worrying what could happen.
Yeah. And sometimes taking a step backward is a catapult to taking a bigger step forward. So you can take a step backward, go inside, look at all the crap that you keep trying to ignore, sort it out, let it, you know, bring it to the light, look at it, decide once and for all, okay, I'm not going to think, I don't want that anymore. Make a choice about it. You know, if you take a day to just kind of, like, that's what retreats are great for, you know, is like you take that deep dive, you excavate out all the shit, you know, and you say, I'm not going to have this anymore. Like, this isn't what I'm doing. Now you're going to catapult yourself because you just made a powerful decision. You just cleaned out your closet.
Yeah, no, and I love that. Like you said, retreats and workshops and seminars are so good. And even just, you know, taking your own personal retreat. I talk to clients about that all the time, is, you know, not taking an entire day off, but, you know, have a tough day or a tough meeting. You know, if it's 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, say, hey, you know what, finish up what you need to do for the next half hour. Why don't you go off and, you know, take an hour or two before you go home. And I think it's so valuable, but it goes back to what I said before, is recharging. You know, you can't go 24/7 nonstop. So if you want to go home for your kids or your spouse or significant other, you know, take an hour, take a half an hour and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to just recharge, meditate, listen to some music, listen to a podcast, but I want to be able to attack XYZ head on. And I think that's something that I'm realizing as I'm getting older, is, you know, there's so much value in that. And I don't know if it was the young, tough part of me just saying, you know, I can go 100 miles an hour nonstop. As I'm getting older, I'm saying I can still go 100 miles an hour. But it's also really effective to take a 5-minute, you know, hiatus. It's good to take a 20-minute siesta here and there. And all of a sudden, you realize if you do it and you figure out what works for you. And that's the thing I talk a lot about with my clients, is don't read somebody's blog and say, well, this person said 30 minutes is, you know, the optimal nap time. I was like, for you, it might be 8 minutes, might be 21 minutes. Figure out what works for you, but definitely recharge. And as I've gotten older, I see the value in recharging so much more now.
Absolutely. Well, because you got to repack the energy field, you know, when you're young, you just have all this bountiful energy. And then you get older, you got to be more wise with it. That's why they call it self-mastery. You know, you're supposed to be learning along the way how to not burn the candle at both ends and get like twice as much done. And when you get into the flow state, and I know there's a lot of research out there starting to emerge about flow state. I live most of my life in flow state because of the work that I do. And it's just like, it's amazing what I accomplished. And people are like, how do you get all that done? And I'm like, I'm in flow. Like, I'm not arguing with myself all the time. So there's no like points of friction. Like, I am just in the flow. I'm doing the thing and everything flows together. And it's when I get out of that flow that things get difficult and I got to expend energy. So, you know, if I'm in the flow, I'm not really expending energy. I'm just sort of like doing what I'm supposed to do. Like, you know, how many podcasts I published one every week this whole year so far. I did five retreats in different places. I published a book that's going to come out July 27th. So it's like, that's a lot to accomplish in 1 year. It's like more than what people do in like a couple of years. But it's like, because I'm in flow. But people have to like get in the flow, which means they got to get out of the past and out of their, you know, their self-judgments and out of their thought tunnels and their mind mazes and all the stuff that goes on in here, the mind chatter that just like drags people down. They got to get out of that space and into, you know, this trusting part that everything's working out just like it's supposed to.
You said that on my show, and I love that word is the mind chatter. And I think you said it best is when you're in your flow and you stop arguing with yourself. And I don't even want to murder the quote, but I remember reading a quote probably a couple months ago is saying, you know, when you argue with yourself, you're always going to lose. I remember reading that and I was like,
wow. I want to know who said that. That's great. Look, let's look that one up.
But it's so true though, is when you, and I don't think anybody can fully eliminate all that chatter and I don't think you yourself, myself could ever say, you know, I'm in the flow 24/7, everything's perfect. But the people that do accomplish those things, like all you've done this year is you reduce it and you stay in your optimal state. And that I think is like you said, is it's self-mastery and not, you know, everyone says, oh, when I was young, I thought this, and it's not just when you were young and it's not just what happens in life, but it's the reality is that when you're going as a 21-year-old or a 25-year-old, you're just thinking differently and it's not right or wrong. It's just where you are. And when you get older, all of a sudden you say, okay, now I understand this. And everyone says, well, if I only knew this. Well, if you only knew this, then nobody would make mistakes. We'd all be perfect and, you know, we'd all be billionaires. But the reality is during life, we all get knocked down. We have those mistakes, but it's trying to figure out what works for you. And I love that concept with my clients. And I always give examples on my show and from stages. Look, I'll share some ideas and concept that have worked for me, but I'm also going to share some ideas and concept that have worked for clients of mine and guests of mine on my show, because what worked for me might be the worst thing for you. What might be the worst thing for you might be perfect for me, but listen and learn. And like you said, is find an optimal state of flow where you say, you know what, this is working for me. And the other thing I always say to people is find out what your optimal time is too. Cause some people work best crazy early in the morning or, you know, middle of the day or late at night. And that's something that I think I love when people say, well, I'm a morning person. And they say, oh, you know, what does that mean? Well, I get up at, you know, 9:30 or 10 o'clock. I'm like, nah, you're not really a morning person. I'm like,
that's mid-morning.
That's like mid, but and then I asked the other question, and they said, well, I've been working until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And I said, no, I said, you're an evening person. I was like, so refocus that so you can have your optimal time. And I think once people understand what that is for them, I think their productivity for whatever they're doing automatically increases.
Yeah, understanding, know thyself is the commandment, you know, and that is definitely true. Know thyself. That's our job, is to know this little thumbprint suit and what this one wants to do, you know, how this one works. Nobody else knows how yours works. You're the one who knows. And, you know, the other thing I love that you're saying is that, and we're going to conclude in just a second, but the thing I love that you're saying is that I hear you not telling people, if you only do it this way, I'm going to coach you so that you won't have any more problems. I love how you're like, that's not going to happen. That is a faulty promise. That is not going to happen. If you're doing that, you're staying too small. So I love how you're like building resiliency. You're teaching no quit. Like, this is about resiliency. It's not about like not creating any more problems.
Yeah. For me, when I started in the coaching world, I learned from a ton of people. I listened. I think my mom and my dad taught me at an early age, you know, ask a lot of questions. And I think people in today's day and age don't ask a lot of questions. But for me, one of the things I'm fixated with our company is different strokes for different folks. I have my foundation that works for me. You have your foundation that works for me. You have your words. I have my words. We say a lot of the same thing, but neither of us are saying this is how it has to be done. These are my 12 steps. And if you don't follow my 12 steps, you're not going to be a client of mine. But I think a lot of times people want to, you know, sell what they do, and not that it's right or wrong, but for me, I realized that I can reach more people. And that's my number one objective with our company, our podcast, our books and everything, is to inspire as many people as we can. And what I realized is that we have to have different ideas. We have to have different concepts. And you were a guest on my show. I asked some very open-ended questions because I want to know. It's not yes or no, Carrie, do you like this? And like, no one wants to hear an interview like, yes or no, you like the Yankees? No, okay. Yes or no, you're a Republican? No, it's like, well, tell me what books you read. You know, what does success mean to you? You know, do you have a morning routine? And what I always tell people at the end of my kind of wrap up my show is, you know, Carrie shared X, Y, Z. You know, I challenge you to figure out what works best for you. Or I challenge you, you know, read the book that you met, whatever it is out there, but it's just, it's being open-minded. And I think some of the most successful people that I look up to, all walks of life, all genres, all age, all demographics, are people that have listened and learned, but continue to try different things. And for me, if I had to pass along one thing to my three kids right now, I would say just be open to trying different things and don't make a decision at 10 or 12 years old and say, this is how I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. Because it might change when you're 13 or 15, or you might be a senior in college and say, hey, you know what? I realized I want to do, you know, this job, or I want to try that. And I think that's the best part about coaching and the wide range of clients we have is I learn all the time too. And I tell people that all the time is it shouldn't be me up on stage or me in front of a room, you know, preaching, this is how you do it. I literally will be doing a meeting and all of a sudden I'll grab a pen and a paper and I'll just write something down, like, wow, that's, I never thought of that. And I love doing that because what it also shows my clients is, wow, you know, this guy and this company, they're open and they realize that it's not their way or the highway.
Yeah, because we all have a unique journey. You know, we can learn from each other and we can have points of connection where we understand each other for a moment. We build little bridges to each other, but ultimately the journey is yours. And if you don't take the journey, guess what? Nobody ever will, because this is a one-time pass through this particular thumbprint suit. If you don't explore it, nobody will. So that's important. I want people to explore their thumbprint suits, Chris. So awesome. Well, so this has been great. I really enjoyed this conversation. How can people get to know you? Do you have any, an entry point for them to come in and find out more about what you do?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So the two ways, we're pretty big on social media. We do a lot on Instagram. And we also have our podcast, which is just our name, No Quit Living. It's on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, obviously on iTunes and Spotify. But also people could check out our website. And for me, I always give my personal email address, which is chris@noquitliving.com. And like you said, is I love connecting with different people. I loved the word you said is building bridges to and from. And for me, one of my personal objectives every day is to meet somebody new and connect with somebody, whether we talk again or not, unknown. But in today's day and age with technology, you know, you're only one click away from possibly a great relationship connection. And for me, I just love to connect with people. So I'd love people to reach out. And, you know, it's kind of how you and I connected is, you know, we got introduced and then, you know, you make a connection and all of a sudden we find out we're both from Connecticut and there's a lot of fun stuff out there.
That's right. We both played sports and we both like the whole game aspect of living. So cool. Well, this has been really fun. I really enjoyed it. This interview could go on and on because I love it and we're having so much fun. And I think our listeners have really enjoyed it. And so I want to include everybody and say, hey, if you really enjoyed a part of this or you got something valuable from it or you have a question even, you know, feel free to leave a comment. This is going to be on iTunes and YouTube and Stitcher and Spotify and TuneIn and I don't know where else, the website, Soul Nectar Show. So, you know, leave us a comment and Chris and I'll be happy to get back on that comment and give you, an answer or to say thanks. Thanks for leaving a comment. And if you want to leave a review for Soul Nectar Show, I definitely appreciate that. We're always looking to expand the audience and make it bigger and help more people find this inspirational wisdom from all these wonderful people like Chris. And so I welcome you to do that. And now we're going to conclude with kisses. You want to join me? I give everybody kisses. Okay, here they come, people. Awesome. Love you all. Have a beautiful week. We'll see you next time on Soul Nectar Show, everybody. Bye.
To dive in deeper to nourishing conversation, visit soulnectar.show.
Soul Nectar Show. Awaken awaken. Take a sip from the drip of nectar, from the source of who you are.